Here in America, work is in trouble. We've offshored our manufacturing, sent away good jobs, and lost so much ability to make things. American Giant is pushing back against that tide. They make high-quality clothing for a summer wardrobe you'll love, all made right here in the USA. Support America's workers and get 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com, code STAPLE20.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Three Down Nation podcast. I'm Justin Dunk, joined by John Hodge and JC Abbott. Today, boys, we're going to be talking a lot about Canadian quarterbacks. Are you okay if we go a little bit long there, Hodge?
I don't think we have a choice, do we?
Never when Canadian QBs are involved.
No, no choice at all. We're going long.
My only concern, will we finish this episode before it's time to record next week's episode?
Let's see, boys.
Could go that long.
Let's get to talking about Nathan Rourke becoming a free agent following his release from the New York Giants.
Ryan Reynolds fondly remembering his childhood attending BC Lions games.
Ryquell Armstead getting ejected against the Stampeders.
A surprisingly low TV rating from Week 7's matchup between the Blue Bombers and Rough Riders.
And Jeremiah Masoli returning to the active roster for the Red Blacks. But first, Canadian QB Trey Ford took over the controls for the Elks with 10 minutes left to play on Sunday night and led the team's offense to three straight touchdown drives, hitting Curley Gittens Jr., Gavin Cobb, and Eugene Lewis for scores. McLeod Bethel-Thompson managed only 85 passing yards and 8 points over three quarters of work during a 44-28 loss to the Tiger Cats. JC, why did it take so long for Ford to be put on the field by Edmonton?
I have no idea, both in this game and overall. Frankly, the reality is that the Edmonton Elks got embarrassed for 50 minutes in this game and then shamed for 10 of them, because once Trey Ford got the ball in his hands, he did what everybody in the entire CFL fandom knew he was going to do, which is light it up and make electric plays with his feet and with his arm. Look, I don't think it was necessarily a terrible idea to go with McLeod Bethel-Thompson, and he was terrible in this game, but he hasn't been the problem for them all season. But when you're a team that's this bad and you're losing fan interest as quickly as the Edmonton Elks are, why would you go with a 35-year-old quarterback who's not going to bring any excitement level or bring fans back into the stadium, and frankly has proven through the last 7 weeks that he's not going to bring you victories either? Trey Ford may be more inconsistent. There are going to be games that he loses you because he's going to make wild and chaotic plays. But that's going to come with games that he wins for you outright, because he is never out of it, because he can turn the game on a dime with his athleticism, and he can make plays nobody else can make. That is the only thing that is going to be salvageable for the Edmonton Elks in this season. It's the only thing that's going to get any butts in seats at Commonwealth Stadium. And it's going to be the type of thing that makes a new ownership group look at the Edmonton Elks and view it as something that could potentially be an asset again, because if you've got a player like Trey Ford for the long term, and again, remember, he's in the final year of his rookie deal, you've got to woo him to make him stay. You need to get him on the field.
In order for Trey Ford to stay, fellas, a lot of what has been done to him in the past is going to have to be apologized for if not even more so than that. I think that is arguably the most important factor in what is to come with Trey Ford. The last year of that rookie deal, what has gone on in terms of how the Elks have handled him? Chris Jones, for example, starts this guy, and 5 of his 8 wins as head coach and general manager came when Trey Ford was the starting quarterback for this football team. What do they go? And this is nothing against McLeod Bethel Thompson, but they go out and sign MBT to a contract that, if he was continuing to be the starter for the rest of the season, would have been worth over $500,000, getting up near around, I think it was $540,000, when they didn't necessarily need a QB. Trey Ford has done all he can do as a quarterback coming up through the ranks in minor football and at the University of Waterloo, and since he's become a pro, to become a more refined athlete playing the quarterback position. The one throw that sticks out to me from the game, guys, is one that was dropped by Gavin Cobb in zone coverage. It looked like, we don't know the play, so I don't necessarily like going down this road, but a seam or a post route. And Trey Ford put that ball on the money on his back shoulder. Cobb needed to gear down, but that throw alone told me that Ford has progressed as a passer, from the pocket, as a pocket passer. Perhaps some of that is due to McLeod Bethel Thompson, but I feel like, without getting into any negative aspects of what's going on here, the Elks would be in a much better position in terms of the standings if Ford had started from game one of the 2024 season. And all those owners who were interested in this team perhaps would have paid up more, having an idea of the excitement that this kid can generate. And quite frankly, it got to the point where, I know this is outlandish and probably shouldn't even be said, but the CFL should have fined the Elks for keeping this guy on the bench because he is the best marketing tool for this league since one Nathan Rourke, who we're going to talk about in a little bit. That's the level that I feel like the Elks are just leaving this guy on the bench. And I know that sounds crazy, people. You can at me on Twitter if you want, but those are the cold, hard facts. Look at the two plays in particular that he pulled off. That crazy scramble for a deep shot down the field, and then the crazy scramble where he ran, which, oh, by the way, the CFL or its right holder, TSN, didn't even post on social media. Like, how do you not post these plays that are unbelievable? Let's take full advantage of what he can do for a league and a television network and everybody that's associated and wants the CFL to do well. Do we hold the Three Down League to account? Yes. Would it benefit the league to have another Canadian superstar a la Nathan Rourke? Heck yes. Please, please, please let this kid play, flourish, and develop into the star that we all know he can be.
I want to ask you guys a question. I'll ask JC this. How many touchdown passes does Zach Collaros have so far this season through 7 starts?
Less than the 3 that Ford
has.
He's got three. Okay.
And Justin, in 10 minutes of work, how many passing touchdowns does Trey Ford have?
Count them.
So yeah, so it's the same amount. It's the same amount.
Uno, dos, tres.
Tres. There, yeah. That was the joke. Well done. Well done.
Like
well done. Listen, after I tweeted essentially saying, calling a spade, calling the joke that was Edmondson's unbelievable mismanagement of their personnel this season out, I got a number of people hitting me back saying, well, this is just garbage time. Like, this is, if you think it's impressive to score touchdowns against soft zone, prevent defense. Well, let's actually watch the plays back. So the touchdown pass to Curley Gittens Jr., the Ticats have 7 defenders at the line of scrimmage and they're playing man behind that. If you think that 7 men at the line of scrimmage with zone behind it is prevent defense, then you need to delete your Twitter account and stop talking about football for the rest of your life, because that is utter stupidity. When you look at the amazing scramble that took place where he hit Javon Leak for a 22-yard reception down the field, the Ticats rushed 5. They blitzed the Sam, and Trey Ford not only burst out of a sack from the defensive line. He then had to fake out Jonathan Moxie to break contain and then throw against his body. If you think five-man pressure is soft prevent defense, then you need to go fly a kite. Like, what is wrong with you? What does Trey Ford need to do for some of you people? Does he need to throw a touchdown pass on a unicycle? Does he need to juggle flame-throwing batons up in the air while he runs for a touchdown? Does he have to do it with a clown wig and fake glasses? Does he have to do it on roller skates? Like what does he have to do? The man has 15 touchdowns and 5 picks since the start of last season. That is a 3-to-1 ratio. Granted, I'm included. And that, by the way, is just the passing touchdowns. He's got 3 rushing touchdowns there as well. He has got a great touchdown interception ratio. He is the only player that Edmonton Elks fans seem to give a rip about right now. The rest of that team was abysmal. It was one of the worst performances I've ever seen through 50 minutes from a team. They made Bo Levi Mitchell look like Bo Levi Mitchell from 10 years ago. Not taking anything away from Bo. Season long, 17 touchdowns, 7 picks, great numbers. But I don't think Bo is 2014 Bo anymore. He looked like 2014 Bo because the Edmonton Elks defense was miserable. And the only guy who played worth anything was in the last 10 minutes. Yeah, he was fresh coming in against a tired defense. And there were a couple plays where, yeah, the Ticats were sitting back. But he made some incredible plays against a defense that was still playing. Jarius Jackson said after the game he thought the Ticats were still playing. And when you look at the number of the biggest plays that Trey Ford made, he made it against a legitimate defense. And I'm sorry. To me, McLeod Bethel-Thompson getting that starting job is all about coaches who are ultra-conservative saying, well, my system is the best thing. My system, I learned this from my mentor. I perfected it. My system is the most incredible thing. And they would rather lose with someone who plays within the system than dare risk handing the offense over to somebody who might improvise or might break their system a little bit. And guess what? If you think that Trey Ford potentially playing outside of your system and maybe throwing a pick every now and again is worth sitting him on the bench and starting somebody ahead of him who, let's call a spade, was absolutely terrible, then you deserve to be fired. Guess what? Chris Jones is on the unemployment line right now. Hopefully other coaches don't make the same mistake because Edmonton is waiting. If they made this change in week 3, they might be in a playoff spot right now. I'm not saying they would be. I certainly don't think they're on 7. And Commonwealth Stadium wouldn't be a barren wasteland of emptiness. There'd be more. Would it be full? No. But there'd be more people there. This is a joke. Finally, long overdue. Let's get Trey Ford in the game.
And it's not even that they didn't start him, right? You've got a guy with 4.4 speed. Like, there's not a quarterback in professional football outside of Lamar Jackson who is as fast as Trey Ford. That's not just speculation. That's a proven fact. He is that fast. He is that freakish. I'm not saying those two are on an equivalent plane, but in that particular area, in terms of their speed and their athleticism, they are. You had that guy. There was not a package for him all season. There was no way of utilizing him. Nothing to get him outside of the pocket or to stretch the defense or to challenge things. No uniqueness to that offense. I've never truly been a fan of Jarius Jackson as an offensive play caller. And I think, frankly, this season and the ways that he hasn't used Trey Ford, even when he wasn't starting him, are the biggest condemnation of that. The idea was that they were going to take Trey Ford and try and get McLeod Bethel-Thompson to teach him a few things about being a pocket passer and make him better for it in the long run. I don't know if that had any effect on Trey Ford whatsoever. That's a question to ask him. I know there were a lot of pictures on social media after this game of McLeod Bethel-Thompson standing on the opposite end of the sidelines while Trey Ford was over there getting coaching points after he was put in the game and not being a veteran presence helping a young quarterback. Maybe those are cherry-picked moments. Maybe it's just a guy who is, as we know, extremely emotional, having a rough time with being sat on the bench. But that's certainly optically didn't look like a guy who was there to help a young quarterback, as McLeod Bethel Thompson professed he was supposed to be when he came into this organization. From the top down, this just seems like it was mismanaged in terms of how to maximize Trey Ford. And no one's saying that he doesn't need development. He is extremely young. He definitely does need to have the reins put on him a little bit. But you look at what a good OC can do with someone like that. Look at the growth that Vernon Adams Jr. has had under Jordan Maksimek in BC, right? And even later in his career in Montreal, when he was already an established starter, the knock on VA was too chaotic, makes big time mistakes, right? He's trying to scramble around there and just do things with his legs, and he's not winging from the pocket. Well, he goes under a good offensive mind who knows how to utilize his strengths, and all of a sudden VA is still an incredible athlete, still uses his legs effectively, still extends plays, but is a person who wins from the pocket, game in and game out. You wonder what Trey Ford could do with proper coaching in the proper situation. That should be the priority for Edmonton. Let him start the rest of the way. Try and mend some of these fences, knowing that it's a lame duck coaching staff and it's a lame duck general manager, I believe, there in Edmonton. And then go out and put all the money you can on the table to get Jordan Maksimek from BC as your next head coach in Edmonton and see what he can do with Trey Ford.
Let's give some credit to Trey Ford for not pouting about not playing, not voicing his possible frustration in the media, and putting his head down and go to work. He deserves a round of applause for that. And that to me is a sign of him being, very quickly and early in his career, an ultimate and true pro. Guys, I'll throw this question at you. I know it's off the top of our heads, but if you had to rank the quarterbacks in the league now, where would Trey Ford sit among his peers in this league?
I'll go first. I would put him... We will not count Chad Kelly because we don't know what version of Chad Kelly we're getting back, if and when, of course, he returns. Right now, I would put him behind Cody Fajardo, Andrew Brown, I suppose Bo Levi Mitchell, and VA. I'd put him in fifth. I would put him ahead of Jake Mayer. I put him ahead of Zach Kolaris, though the offensive line, as we'll talk about a little bit later in the show, I think is the biggest problem in Winnipeg. I'd certainly put him ahead of anybody else Edmonton has. And I'd put him ahead of Cameron Dukes or Nick Arbuckle, so I'd put him in fifth.
I think that's an accurate ranking, Hodge, if you're talking about the current moment. I think you probably bump him up a few spots if you're talking about long-term, the future, what that looks like. Because I'd certainly much rather have a young, athletic Trey Ford who I can mold and develop rather than Bo Levi Mitchell, as well as he's played this year, who's reaching the end of his career, rather than Zach Kolaris, who's getting close to the end of his career. Basically, I would take him over anyone except maybe, well, not VA. VA, I think, is at the top of the list right now, but maybe over anyone else, just in terms of what the upside is. Not right now, but what the upside could be for Trey Ford in the long run.
And there are football people around the league that feel the same way.
I certainly don't disagree. And I want to say this to make this very clear, too. We tell like it is on this show. So if Trey Ford starts this week and goes into Regina and throws six interceptions and fumbles seven times and vomits all over his jersey and looks terrible, we're going to say that. But no reasonable person could watch at what Trey Ford's done since the start of the 2023 season and say he's not been sensational. And if you are that, then you need to put down the haterade. You need to resign as the king of Haiti. You need to stop hating and just enjoy. Get on the bandwagon. He's an exciting player to watch. He's like the Canadian Kyler Murray. He is absolutely engaging out there. And that was evidenced by the fact that Edmonton Elks fans, who were subjected to, again, one of the saddest, most lifeless performances we've seen in years of the CFL, were brought to their feet the instant he hit the field until the time the game ended. Three touchdown passes in 10 minutes. against, again, what was largely a real CFL defense. It was sensational. I want to see more of it. I'm glad that we're getting that opportunity, hopefully this week, in Saskatchewan.
A couple things before we go. I wanted to get to the rankings real quickly just because I think it shows Trey Ford's impact right now. And JC, I liked where you went with that in terms of the future. And also, let's think about this. McLeod Bethel-Thompson played the worst defense he could possibly play because he can't go against the Elks defense in a game. And he looked that bad. And this is the guy that you thought was going to get you to the playoffs when Trey Ford was there all along. The Elks better hope that some of the other quarterback positions around the league get solidified, or there are going to be a handful of teams that are in the race to sign this guy, not just for what he can do on the field, and that is first and foremost, but I think he's proven that with his chances, but the marketing aspect as well. You talked about Chad Kelly being an outlier here, and I think that's smart, but you know, except for Drew Brown, depending how long Cody Fajardo wants to play and Vernon Adams Jr. playing at that great level, I think the rest of the teams around the league with their quarterback situation would take a strong, hard look at Trey Ford. And who knows what's going to come with Nathan Rourke. We'll get into that next.
Well, it could truly be a quarterback carousel in the offseason because you mentioned it. Canadian QB Nathan Rourke went unclaimed on waivers following his release from the New York Giants this week, though he has since booked a workout with the Atlanta Falcons on Wednesday. Is the former CFL award winner's NFL dream dwindling, Dunk?
That's the way I think the public perceives it, but there is still real NFL interest in Nathan Rourke. And I think not being claimed actually puts him in a more favorable situation where he can pick his next destination. Look at the depth charts, go over things, and not waste his time like the New York Giants did to him. I don't understand claiming him, having him go through organized training activities, learn the playbook, and then getting into the first week of training camp, not giving him many reps, and then releasing him. It just doesn't make sense to me what some of these teams do at quarterback. Like, how can Nathan Rourke not compete with Tommy DeVito? I just don't understand that. The only explanation for that is politics, guys. Let's call it what it is. He's a Canadian, and he's got that CFL label. And for whatever reason, the Americans don't want to give him a real opportunity at quarterback. You talk to people around the Canadian Football League, and even some that I've talked to in the National Football League, and they'll tell you that is the truth. It's about politics, because this guy is good enough definitely to be a third-string quarterback down there, certainly a backup, and he is better than a lot of the chumps that got a chance to start games last year in the NFL due to injuries. I'm not saying he's a top 15 quarterback like Pete Dayakowski said. I'm not going to go that far. I think he would have to prove that. But I think he's a guy who could be a legit, reliable starter with upside in the NFL. And I hope somebody gives him the chance. And it's interesting to me that the Falcons go out and spend $100 million on Kirk Cousins, draft Michael Penix. Yes, it was a shock in the first round of the NFL draft. Want to bring this guy in and have a look at him because they believe there's an opportunity there for him to get better. The workout doesn't mean he's going to sign in Hotlanta, where I think he could heat it up, because it seems like they've had a real lasting interest in him. But it shows that there's interest in the NFL, and Rourke is going to go about this process in a smart and prudent way. And for those out there that think, well, he went unclaimed on waivers, he's going to come right back to the CFL, that ain't happening. If he comes back to the CFL, he is almost all but kissing that NFL dream that he's had for a long time goodbye. And hey, Hodge, you talked about haters with Trey Ford. All the people drinking haterade out there on Nathan Rourke saying that, you know, he doesn't want to play and why isn't he back in the CFL because he could be starting football games and playing. This is this kid's dream. Let him go and live out that dream and chase it as long as he wants, because the CFL, he knows it, we know it, the fans know it, is always going to be here with a big fat check to make him the franchise quarterback of a team. So all the power to Nathan Rourke for continuing to fight through these BS politics that he continues to deal with to try to get a legitimate spot and perhaps a shot. He wants to be a starter down there to play in the NFL.
I do think that this is not the death knell of Nathan Rourke's NFL dream, but I do think that the dream is dwindling. And the reason I say that is because if you look at the 32 depth charts across the NFL, the Giants are the easiest to crack, right? Daniel Jones is not very good. Let's just call a spade a spade. Drew Lock is a second round bust. He's their backup. And Tommy DeVito is Tommy DeVito. Like, this is not an inspired group. And I think that this was the best place to plant your flag. And unfortunately, Rourke didn't even get the chance to do that. Got zero reps in practice, according to a report from TSN. So it's not like he tried to compete and was the fourth, you know, it just failed. Like, he literally did not get a chance to compete. To me, the best landing spot for Nathan Rourke is the Oakland Raiders, or pardon me, the Las Vegas Raiders now. Gardner Minshew, Aiden O'Connell, not a duo that inspires a ton of confidence. We know that the Raiders. We know that the Raiders had interest in Rourke after his sensational 2022 season with the BC Lions. So that, to me, would be the best matchup. The Atlanta Falcons, let's be honest, not a good landing spot. Maybe he could be a PR guy there. Maybe he could beat out Taylor Heineke for the number three spot. We don't know. But obviously, Kirk Cousins is there for the next 2 years. Obviously, Michael Penix is the future. It would take luck and a Herculean effort for Nathan Rourke to work in Atlanta long term. So I'm not saying don't do the workout. Getting a workout is great. You can get film from it. You can have people talking to each other, develop some buzz. So I think he's smart to do the workout on Wednesday. My only point is I do think that this is a legitimate step back. That being said, I know a lot of people are hoping that Nathan Rourke signs in the NFL. I know, Justin, you already reported that's not happening. He's not signing in the CFL this year. If Nathan Rourke, I just want to paint this picture for people. If he decides, okay, I'm done with the NFL, I'm coming back up north, he will be, and this is my take, the most sought-after free agent the CFL has had since Doug Flutie. Like literally 30 years. Like, the only comp I can really think of in the last 10 would be the year that Bo Levi Mitchell tested free agency before signing back with the Calgary Stampeders. And Nathan Rourke is younger than Bo was then. He is a better athlete than Bo was then. And he's Canadian, right? He not only counts as one of your seven Canadian starters, but there's all the marketing aspect that comes along with having a Canadian sensational quarterback. So Nathan Rourke coming back to the CFL is going to be, if and when it happens, a monumental occasion. Teams are going to be rolling out the red carpet. This is not just going to be, hey, we'll pay you Zach Kolaris money. Holy crap, I'm going to sign. No, this will be, we are going to sign a record contract with you. We are going to be paying you hundreds of thousands of dollars a year off the cap in marketing money. We are going to find a house for you and your wife to live in. We are going to make you the face of this team. And we are going to lay out exactly what our plan is with our coaching staff. Heck, it wouldn't surprise me. You mentioned Jordan Maksimek off the top of the show, JC. By the way, for Elks fans, Jordan Maksimek was born in St. Albert, which, for people outside of Edmonton who don't know, is a suburb of Edmonton. I believe it's just like northwest of the city. So that'd be a great fit for Edmonton Elks head coach. But regardless, we know that Maksimek and Rourke worked brilliantly together in 2022. If I'm a CFL team who wants Nathan Rourke in 2025, I'm hiring Jordan Maksimek for that reason. Give me Jordan Maksimek, and I'll say, hey, Nathan, we got your guy as our head coach, and he's going to call the exact plays, design the exact offense that you want. That is the type of red carpet treatment that Nathan Rourke will get in 2025 if and when he comes back. Signing a deal mid-2024 when CFL teams don't have any money to spend because their roster's already set, they've already done that, makes no sense. So even if Rourke wanted to come back to the CFL right now, if I was his agent, I would say, you are nuts if you're coming back now. Let's wait till December, January. Let's make a decision then. Because by the way, if you can beat all the CFL free agents to market who are going to market in February, that's just going to make the purse strings even more open from CFL teams who are going to have all the money in the world to spend. So we are going to see a bidding war, I believe, like we've never seen before in the CFL, at least not in the last 30 years, if Rourke comes back up north. And that is all the more reason not to rush this if you're Nathan Rourke. Exhaust the NFL opportunities, limited as they might be. We don't know exactly yet. Then when you come back up north, heck, the sky's the limit for what this guy could earn.
Yeah, you're spot on with that, Hodge. And I think it goes as you alluded to, far beyond the dollars and cents. If Rourke is on the market, this is a guy who coaches are going to get fired to try and acquire by bringing in a guy like Jordan Maksimek to help teams' odds. We haven't seen something like that happen in pro football since the Houston Oilers went out and got Hugh Campbell to bring in Warren Moon back in the day, right? That's the type of stuff that you're going to see happen for Nathan Rourke, let alone the fact that if he's really, truly honest about wanting to be back in BC, that'll kick off a whole other set of negotiations and potential trade talks, intrigue around the status of Vernon Adams Jr., who has a long-term contract with that franchise right now, right? And heck, if you're the Edmonton Elks, why stop at Jordan Maksimek? Just give the guy the ownership of the entire franchise. Nathan Rourke, owner, coach, general manager, and quarterback of the Edmonton Elks. I think that has a nice ring to it. But going back to his NFL stakes, I actually am going to disagree with you on that one, Hodge. I don't think a place like Oakland, or but like Las Vegas, sorry, is the best spot for work, because we've seen what happens when you enter areas of controversy at the quarterback position. New York was supposed to be a great spot for Rourke. Look how that worked out. New England was supposed to be a great spot for Rourke to shine. Look how that worked out. If you enter a team that is unsettled at quarterback, the chances are is they're going to go and try and find somebody else, or they're going to try and protect their job. And frankly, given a guy from the CFL a big-time opportunity isn't going to do that for those franchises. I think he was on the right track originally when he signed with a team like Jacksonville that had a bona fide number one. And as much as we railed on the Jaguars for not giving him a chance to compete with CJ Beathard for the number two job, that was a great spot for Rourke because he won the number three without any effort. He was going to be on that team all year. And the only reason he left was because he had to go through waivers because he was getting pulled up and placed back down on the practice squad over and over again. If you can get to a spot where you're a solid number three, they give you a whole year. Eventually, maybe you replace the number two the next season and you wait for a bona fide starting quarterback to get hurt and then you get real minutes. I think that's the opportunity that has to happen to Nathan Rourke. It's a slow play. It'll take time. It'll take luck for you and an unfortunate circumstance for somebody else, but you want to go somewhere where you've got basically a guarantee to be the number three and a chance long term to grow into that role and hopefully have a moment where you can step in and prove yourself. Because if you look at all the UDFA or late round quarterbacks around the league who have stuck around long term or who have become stars, it's not because they were given an opportunity right off the bat. It's because something in front of them happened by pure circumstance and they were thrust into real minutes and they proved themselves. That's how it has to happen for Rourke. And frankly, I'd be wary of going to a situation that's too chaotic because you might get lost in the shuffle and you might get moved on from far too quickly.
JC, man, you must be smoking that BC grass because I agree with Hodge. The Raiders is a great spot. They're not going to go and change their quarterback position drastically going into the season. Like, what are you talking about?
Well, not going into the season, but... but if you're going in there as the third guy, right, for the Raiders, right, you're still going to be behind O'Connell and you're going to be behind Minshew. Maybe you get starts at the end of the year, maybe, and maybe that works out for you. But if they've got that quarterback room, they're going to finish dead last, and by next year, they're going to draft a quarterback, right? They're going
but
to bring in
to
or
play
go out,
JC
sign a big-time
year.
Name in free agency. He doesn't need to play this year. He needs to establish himself. I think those are different things. If you get on a roster and you get ingrained with a team and your job's not at risk, that's just as good as getting onto the field, right? He needs to get entrenched in the NFL. Playing is one of the ways to do that, but it is the far more difficult way to do that. If you get entrenched, it's a slower burn, but that is the way that it works out for most guys, right? You got to be like a Tony Romo. Tony Romo, undrafted guy. We think of him as, you know, the instant success story with the Dallas Cowboys. He was 3-4 years as a backup before he got a shot. Tom Brady, 6th round pick. Okay. Did he start year one? No, he didn't. He was the 4th stringer that year, but New England invested in him, let him get promoted year after year. And then eventually Drew Bledsoe gets hurt and he steps in, right? For it doesn't always happen quick like Brock Purdy. For most guys like that, it's got to take a few years of building trust. You want to go to an organization where your job is not going to be in jeopardy to do that.
I do think that's a good point. Well, in Jacksonville, let's say Trevor Lawrence goes down for a month, right? CJ Beathard gets the first 2 starts for sure. If he's struggling in that start number 3, because Jarius Jackson's not the coach, so you don't have to wait forever to get your backup in the game. He will pull the pin at some point, right? Presumably Nathan Rourke would have gotten in that, right? So I do see what you're laying out, JC. I just think now that he's a little bit older, he's 26 years old, which isn't ancient, but it's certainly not young, right? There's 20 quarterbacks who come into the league every year. Like this year, what? There was 8 drafted, 10 drafted, and then a number of others who signed as UDFAs. I know the Raiders have a couple other quarterbacks. They're guys who, like Nathan Rourke, were smaller school guys, haven't really done anything yet at the NFL level, obviously. Rourke has had success, obviously, at the CFL level. So, I could see a team with an established quarterback, even like the Cowboys, let's say, being a fit for Nathan Rourke if he's playing the long game. But you're right, he's going to need luck at some point, because as you illustrated, there are great NFL quarterbacks who, had they not gotten that one shot and proved themselves when the bullets are flying for real, they never would have got that chance. So we know from Nathan Rourke that preseason's not good enough, right? Because he was sensational in the preseason last year in, albeit limited reps, but he looked great. And obviously that didn't mean diddly squat to the NFL.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
It's a great time to save big on everything for your next project at Menards. Get free estimates fast on new energy-efficient windows from Jeld-Wen. Choose from vinyl or wood windows and customize the perfect size and unique features for your home. Save big on all Jeld-Wen windows today. View our entire selection of Jeld-Wen windows on Menards.com. Plus, the weekly flyer for other great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
And that's my exact point here, JC. I think what you said is valid from the standpoint of going to a team that's willing to invest in him and commit to him for the somewhat near future or longer term, I guess. But exactly what Hodge said is the reason why I believe he needs to find a way to play, is because what he did in the preseason didn't seem to impress a lot of people around the league, which I can't understand. That play that he made against the Dallas Cowboys in the Jerry Dome, few quarterbacks have ever made in any kind of NFL game. I don't care if it's exhibition, preseason, regular season, playoffs, Super Bowl, any of the games they played in London, Mexico, wherever. That was unbelievable. So if he can entice a team to commit to him for the near future, let's say 1 to 2 years for him to develop, like the guys you laid out, and with all due respect, I don't think we can compare him to Tony Romo or Tom Brady or those guys, because they were developed at American institutions and they were American. I think part of what's going on here is the political game that he's a CFL kid.
I don't think viewed as by NFL people. Anything to do with it? CFL does.
It definitely does. The passport and CFL. It's a combination. They're one and the same. Just let me finish. They're one and the same. JC, let me finish for a second. He needs to play. Okay. Nathan Rourke needs to play in regular season action. I agree with you. If he went to the San Francisco 49ers and got with Kyle Shanahan and they committed to him with John Lynch and a stable organization for a number of years, that would be ideal. But I believe in order for that to happen, he needs to play. You're welcome to go ahead now.
No, I just don't think passport plays into it. I hear that narrative over and over and over again. I don't think 90% of the people who look at Nathan Rourke's tape or who consider bringing him in even know he's Canadian. They know he played in the CFL. I don't think they have any clue where he was born or he was brought up. I mean, he played high school ball in the United States, in the state of Alabama, and he went to Ohio, okay? It's not a situation like Trey Ford where they're looking at, like, what's a University of Waterloo? What does that mean? Like, for all intents and purposes, to them, he's an American. But he's an American who went to the CFL, who went to a small school, and who was undrafted. All of those things matter. The passport, frankly, does not matter at all in this evaluation equation. I would bet you dollars to donuts, Dunk, that if you asked every personnel person in the NFL, all 32 teams, and you ask them, what country is Nathan Rourke a citizen of? 28 of them will tell you he's American, obviously.
I don't think so.
Because they don't even think.
That's their job.
They don't even consider. There's so many guys. When we go through the NFL draft process, I've seen GMs talk about guys that they've just drafted and like, oh, he's Canadian. I didn't know that. Because all they think about is, oh, well, he went to Penn State. Right, that is what they care about. Okay,
it's different.
They are not concerned about passport. They are concerned about his playing history and trajectory.
I will say this: I am unwilling to bet dollars or donuts because those are my two favorite things, and I don't part ways with dollars or donuts. So I'm unwilling to place any dollars to donuts bet.
Before we move on, fellas, I just want to touch on all of this CFL chatter online about, you know, if he comes back to the CFL. And this quote really said it all to me when he was on TSN. JC, you sort of alluded to it, but he said, I would love to come back and play in this league that I love so much. I love playing in front of these fans. This is while he was at BC Place. I love playing in front of family, and I love to return to an organization that I love, that feels like family to me in BC with the Lions. Nathan Rourke is a man of very devout and strong Christian faith. And the fact that he is talking about the BC Lions and putting them in the same sentence as family, to me, speaks volumes. I'm not saying that he's definitely going to go back and sign with the BC Lions if he does end up coming back to the CFL. I actually don't hope that that happens. I hope that an NFL team realizes the talent and this kid's work ethic is worth it to commit to him for a season or two to see what he might have, even as a backup to help a franchise. I believe he can do it. But if he comes back up here, you hear those words from a man of strong Christian faith, and then you think of Amar Doman and what he has done there. God knows what he paid 50 Cent to come up and help sell out BC Place. Do you think Amar Doman is going to lose Nathan Rourke? Really? Does anybody actually with half a brain or even one brain cell out there think Amar Doman is going to lose a guy that was born in British Columbia within those borders to another CFL team? Like, I have a hard time fathoming me. Again, I'm not saying it's lock, stock, and file it away, but that to me seems nearly unbelievable.
Yeah, it would certainly be difficult to imagine him playing in a different uniform. But the wrinkle with that, and I alluded to this as well, is the fact that Vernon Adams Jr. has a long-term contract.
Bro, there's no wrinkle. Sign Rourke and trade him away. Who cares? Are you kidding?
Well, hey, here's the thing. And I think BC would do that,
bro.
But there would be consequences. Well, and there would be teams that might trade for Vernon Adams Jr. But
what consequences?
Because
you get the best player since Doug Flutie and the ultimate marketing tool that the CFL has had, arguably since Flutie. Pretty heavy consequences.
The consequences are that are in 2026 that you would lose $250,000 worth of cap space, which
who
in
cares?
The CFL
trade
is not
release
insignificant. Particularly if you are paying your quarterback. Yeah, like that's $1 million worth on just quarterbacks on a $5 million cap. That makes it hard to put pieces around anybody. And I think Rourke can
as
elevate
Hodges
people,
pointed out a number of times, you could pay Nathan Rourke whatever you want on the marketing cap.
Yes, you could, but I mean, A, that's if they don't close that loop.
There ain't no consequences for signing Nathan Rourke, bro. Ain't no consequences.
I think that's naive. That is naive to say there's no consequences. I would do it, but there are consequences.
I have also been led to believe that there could be work being done to close that loophole with the marketing money, but we'll have to wait and see.
Yeah, and the reality is you can trade Vernon Adams Jr. and you don't have to have those costs. But if every team in the league knows that they have the pressure to force you to release him and incur $250,000 worth of dead money, which is more dead money than we have ever seen basically anyone absorb in the CFL, it would be an unprecedented hit to a salary cap. Why would any team offer anything? You just sit and wait. You hope you can win the sweepstakes for VA by backing up the Brinks truck yourself. Don't get locked into that contract, offer a new one, and hurt your opponent at the same time, right? It puts BC in a difficult situation there. There are ways around it. I think they would bend over backwards to make it happen, but it would be a difficult situation to manage.
No, it's easy. Sign Nathan Rourke, figure out the rest later. Hodge, what's your side on this? Break the tie.
What is the issue even? Does BC bring back Nathan Rourke? Is that what I'm being asked?
Yeah. JC thinks it's extremely difficult, and comes with consequences. I say sign him and figure it out later. What do you say?
I certainly think the BC Lions would sign him and just figure out the consequences later. Do I think it happens?
I don't know. Think so, but that doesn't mean there's no consequences.
I don't care what the consequences are if I get Nathan Rourke. He's the best player in a league where his marketing power is bigger than anything else. I don't care.
There are no consequences. It's all upside. Release Vernon Adams Jr., eat the cap money. Who cares? Mark Domann could go buy him a house, set him up with a job for the rest of his life. Just like some other players around the CFL who shall go unnamed, there are things powerful people can do, okay? I'm not saying it's going to happen for sure,
but it
just seems to me that you line those things up, a man of strong faith who's born out there and Amar Doman, and I have a hard time seeing him potentially going anywhere else. Perhaps Jordan Maksimek can change that, but when the man's talking about this on national TV, he means it. He doesn't just say things, JC, you know that.
I agree with you. I think BC is the most likely place. I just think the cap hit in 2026 would be essentially unprecedented. And that matters. As much as Nathan Rourke is the magical miracle cure, or that's what CFL teams see him as, that would be significant in terms of roster construction. And that's what GMs deal with every day, is how am I going to put a team around Nathan Rourke when I'm dealing with that much less money available to me? It would put you at a disadvantage.
But it depends. Nobody with guaranteed money on their contract has ever been traded, as far as I'm aware, in the CFL. So theoretically,
if Vernon Adams Jr. gets traded,
theoretically that guaranteed money could just be at the foot of whoever trades for him. So it might be very easy to get out of that contract if they trade him,
it doesn't matter. But my point is, I don't think trading him, as good as VA is, is a done deal, because as I said before,
you don't think somebody in the CFL would trade for Vernon Adams Jr.?
Not if they know that BC is BC.
JC, all you need is a market of two. Okay, take a breath, go smoke some grass. We're moving on. Okay.
Go ahead.
All it takes is two, man. In free agency, all you need are two bidders. All you need are two interested teams, okay? You haven't provided any tangible consequences
for me as to why the BC Lions
wouldn't go all out to sign Nathan Rourke.
Just saying, if I'm a GM, I got BC over the barrel.
No, you don't have him over the barrel, because you don't think there would be two CFL teams that would want to trade for Vernon Adams Jr.? Two.
I believe there's every team in the league that would be interested in signing him and acquiring him. I think a lot of people
there you go.
That
market created.
Let's let the record
trade for him.
let's let the record show that Vernon Adams Jr. got traded for a first round pick before he ever played a CFL game.
He's not getting a first round pick in this bidding war. I guarantee you, what? The BC Lions would be in too weak of a position. They'd be getting a minimal asset at best.
You are aware that Vernon Adams Jr. got traded for a first round pick. Okay, whatever. Yeah, I don't agree with that.
No, but the point is that was a team that didn't have to release
twice
him.
Twice he's been traded for a first round pick. Yeah,
but that was a team that didn't have to release him. You've got BC in a position where they would have to release him.
And since then, he is playing the best football of his career. But as we all know, he's not even worth an eighth round pick. No.
No, but that's not how asset management works, guys, though.
Someone's like, traded for Vernon Adams.
JC, what you're saying just doesn't make any sense, dude. They wouldn't have to release him. All you need are a couple of interested teams. And we just talked about Trey Ford potentially being viewed as a top five, if not higher, quarterback for the long term. And you don't think there would be two teams interested in trading for Vernon Adams Jr.?
No, I think there would be a lot of teams interested. I don't know how many. Like, you're in a negotiation. You play hardball with the Lions. He becomes available to you. You don't have to give up an asset. And
you're not getting him. JC, we've seen trades happen in this league just to acquire the rights of quarterbacks. The rights to sign him.
Quarterbacks are always
worth. Would want to trade for Vernon Adams Jr., who is playing the best football of his career. Bro, you're crazy. We're cutting you off for your own good. Okay? Let's move on. Hodge. One of the deciding plays in Saturday's game between the Winnipeg Blue Bombers and Toronto Argonauts came early in the fourth quarter when Deshaun Amos broke up a pass intended for Canadian receiver Nick Dembski, and it was tipped twice before landing in the arms of Tavares McFadden, who returned it for a touchdown. Head coach Michael Shea challenged for pass interference, though the call stood upon review. Was it PI? Do we even know what pass interference is anymore? And now is Winnipeg at 2-6, essentially out of the playoff mix?
The answer to the first question is yes. It was obviously PI. You can't arrive at the receiver before the ball gets there. I was actually pleasantly surprised by the CFL's officiating across the board this past week after week 7 saw more laundry than a frat house the day after a party, with flags left, right, center, everywhere, all over the place, including 23 in that Calgary BC game, which stretched on forever because every little ticky tacky thing was called. There were very few flags this past week, which I appreciated. And I appreciated no flag live, because let the players fight. And then if the command center wants to step in, if somebody wants to challenge, you can challenge. The issue is upon review. It was obviously PI. That has been called to a T. For years at the CFL, and randomly it was not. So I don't know what PI is in the CFL anymore. Whatever. I will also say, I don't think the Bombers lost because of that play. They lost because they fumbled the ball 4 times, losing 3, and their offensive line had one of the worst games I've seen a Winnipeg offensive line have in a decade. So I'm not blaming the officials for the result of the game, but that particular play was alarming, because if that's what the command center is looking at and said, no, that's not PI, well, apparently not much in the CFL is PI, at least based on what used to be. As for Winnipeg's season being over, the answer is no, but oh my gosh, like, this team has some work to do. First of all, I think the Bombers are going to get killed this week because they are coming off a short week. They look battered. They look bruised. They looked like a boxer after round 10. Is that how many rounds a boxing match has? I've never watched a full boxing match before, admittedly. Whatever. Let's say 10 rounds. They're hosting the BC Lions this week. The Lions are coming off a bye, and they're angry and motivated from losing that Calgary Stampeders game 2 weeks ago. I don't think it's going to be close at Princess Auto Stadium. I think this team is going to be 2-7 at the halfway mark. Their only saving grace is they've won the regular season series against the Calgary Stampeders, a team that, as much as they beat the BC Lions 2 weeks ago, looked absolutely atrocious against the Ottawa Redblacks this past week, losing 33-6. So to me, I think the Bombers are still in a decent position to make the playoffs, but their ceiling is third in the West. They're not catching Saskatchewan. They're not catching the BC Lions, as far as I'm concerned. And if you're hoping to make noise in the playoffs, doing so as the third seed is really tough. Yes, the Bombers did it in 2019 and won a great cup, but they didn't have to go to a dome, right? Winnipeg is not a dome team. Winnipeg is a punch you in the mouth, run the football kind of team. They are not designed to go into BC place, whether it is for West semifinal or the Western final, and win. So I don't think the season's on life support yet. I think that the offensive line deserves the chance to get it right. Patrick Neufeld had, I think, the worst game I've ever seen him play, which says a lot because I've seen him play at this point, heck, 165, 170 games maybe. But yeah, it's time to put up or shut up for Winnipeg. Not this week, because again, I think the odds are stacked against them this week. It's after the bye. They have to go to Vancouver in week number 11 after their bye. Then they've got Hamilton. Then they've got their annual home and home with Saskatchewan. If this team is for real, I think they have to find a way to win at least two of those. I think the home game to Hamilton would be the obvious one. They got to steal one from Saskatchewan, maybe get one from BC. And then after that, they've got a home and home with Edmonton, so they can stack some wins there. But at the end of the day, this team, it's between them and Calgary, as far as I'm concerned, for the final playoff spot in the West. And Winnipeg's got to push their sleeves up because they were sloppy this past week on the offensive side of the ball. Defense was great. Full marks to the defense. That secondary, I think, is the best in the CFL. Honestly, it's remarkable that they gave up nothing to Cameron Dukes and Nick Arbuckle, despite the fact that they cannot for the life of them get pressure with four. That defensive line is not what it used to be. The secondary is great. The D-line needs work. The O-line needs work. Kenny Lawler coming back should help. That should be relatively soon. Signing Rashid Bailey, that might help. That could happen reasonably soon. But they've got to get it figured out in the trenches because the O-line and the D-line are letting them down right now.
Yeah, to me, the defining moment of this game was not necessarily a play that had a huge impact, but spoke volumes about where the Winnipeg Blue Bombers are as a franchise right now. And that was Kadeem Carey getting the ball on a simple handoff, meeting Adam Big Hill, one of the greatest ever linebackers in CFL history,
Ooh-wee.
In the hole, and knocking him into next week without breaking stride. That is potentially the only time in all of the many, many years I've watched Adam Big Hill where I've seen him get brutalized and embarrassed like that. And I think that is a perfect metaphor for what this team is right now. They're just too old. They're not good enough. They don't have the pieces as it stands. Now, I think the playoffs is still realistic. I'm not a believer in Calgary. I would throw even an Eastern crossover here from Hamilton into the mix. I don't think they can be entirely discounted as much as they struggled early in the year. The last 2 weeks have been impressive from them. But Winnipeg, with the pieces that are coming back, I think could potentially sneak into that last playoff spot. But they're not Grey Cup contenders. They don't have the guys right now. And even the young players that they are rounding into form, that they are developing, well, once they are fully ready, this next batch of guys, the Stanley Bryants, the Adam Big Hills, all of those guys, the Patty Neufelds, they will be, I think, done after this year, or they should be done. They are fading out. They are on the back end of their careers. And for me, this will be the determining factor on Mike O'Shea's legacy, because we have seen over the last number of years that he has been a brilliant head coach, that he has taken this team to heights that we have not seen in years in the CFL. If he wasn't already a Hall of Famer as a player, he'd be a Hall of Famer for a head coach. But the true great ones, right, the guys at the very top of the wins list, the ones that Mike O'Shea might eventually chase, the Wally Bongos, the Don Matthews, those guys got there not just because guys rallied around them in loyalty, but because when they needed to be, they were brutal. They made decisions a year too early rather than a year too late. They let guys go that they loved and they respected because they had to, because it was the business, and because the team mattered more. At this point, I don't know if we've seen that from Mike O'Shea, if he can be that guy. I have tremendous respect for what he's done. They were as successful as they were because he valued guys so much and he elevated the camaraderie of a locker room. But if they want to get back to it and they want to reach that level once again, He's going to have to learn to be brutal like the all-time greats. And we're going to learn, I think, this offseason if he has that in him.
That is so well said, JC. I was hard on you in the last segment, but that was absolute perfection. It's clear, and I don't want to say this cliche because I think there's still a chance here for this team to bounce back, get in the playoffs, but that they're starting to at least come down the other side of the cliff. I don't think they've completely fallen off the cliff because there have been close games where they've just been oh so close to getting it done. This game against the Argos was one they just pretty much did everything to give away. But I think that will be the ultimate tell on Mike O'Shea here. Is he willing to understand that some of these guys, with all due respect, have reached their best before date? And as much as he loves them and respects them and gives them a great deal of leadership and command over that locker room that he holds so near and dear to the way that he wins, he's going to have to part ways with them. You'll hear people around the league talk about not understanding how Winnipeg continues to roll Brandon Alexander out there as an American safety. You know, I know there have been some changes in the back end there, but that is one that just sticks out to everybody around the league. I do still think that Adam Big Hill is a better than average linebacker, and he's a great leader that O'Shea respects. I think he sees a lot of himself and maybe even a better version than himself in Big Hill because of the way that he used to be able to move around, play different positions, drop back into pass coverage, roll back and play the safety spot. But he just doesn't seem to have that same oomph and energy. Perhaps he'll prove me wrong the rest of the year. And he was in Saskatchewan when I talked to him, and he was speaking about this team being in the playoffs and reaching the Grey Cup again. And I thought, you know, there's a long way to go for this team to turn around and get it there. Now, they have had some injuries. Kenny Lawler was one, as Hodge touched on. Dalton Schoen being out. Those were two go-to receivers for Zach Collaros, who is a guy that loves throwing to veteran dudes who he has a long-standing relationship and trust with, most importantly, on the field. But Collaros has to be much better. We talked about earlier, he has the same amount of touchdown passes as Trey Ford was able to put up in less than 10 minutes for the Elks in week 8. So there are some things that need to come together here for Winnipeg, but I'm not yet a believer in the Calgary Stampeders, and that's a reason why I believe Winnipeg still has a shot to salvage the season and get back in playoff contention. But there needs to be a different energy about this team because they are the complete opposite of what we've seen for the last 4 seasons when they've gone to 4 straight Grey Cups. They are not making those plays at crunch time to win football games. That's what we've become used to with this team. We've become used to seeing Adam Big Hill be the hammer and not the nail. That was an absolute outlier, and perhaps it can be an outlier, but with a 2-6 record, they're going to have to prove that they are the Bombers who we all thought they were, at least for the last 4 years.
Yeah, I do want to mention that Big Hill had an incredible defensive play near the end of the game where he stuffed Cameron Dukes to force a turnover on downs, which then led to the 55-yard touchdown from Zach Collaros to Ontario Pokey Wilson. But the play that JC highlighted did catch me off guard as well. I can't remember Adam Big Hill ever being trucked, ever, in almost 15 CFL seasons now. Been in the league since 2011. So we'll have to wait and see. But yeah, you're right. This is going to say a lot about this team, right? They haven't faced this type of adversity in almost a decade. Like, this team has been a pretty consistent winning team since 2016. And from 2019, especially the middle of that season until 2023, darn near untouchable, right? Well, I think they're about to be 2-7 at the midway point of the season, which that's already more losses than they've had since any season. I think they were 12-6 in 2019. So that's a long time since we saw them lose in 7, and that's halfway through the season. So time for Hodge's Heritage Moment. On this day in 2017, the Calgary Stampeders defeated the Hamilton Tiger Cats by a score of 60-1, marking the largest margin of victory in a CFL game since the turn of the century. I should have put a content warning for Hamilton Tiger Cats fans before starting this segment. The Tiger Cats went on to lose 3 more games before head coach Ken Austin resigned during the team's bye week on August 24th with a record of 0-8. Dunk, what do you remember about the end of Austin's tenure in Tigertown?
Oh boy, I remember our former colleague at Three Down Nation, Drew Edwards, having multiple, can I say this properly, terse interactions with him, especially post-game of that 60-1 loss. And there was a brawl, I believe it was a day or two after that, because the Ticats lost, if I remember right, and it was an Alberta trip, so I think they played the Edmonton football team the next week. And there was an all-out brawl between the offense and defense at practice. It started with Zach Collaros getting into it with a teammate. Like, there was so much heat going back and forth, and it was time. It was long overdue for Kent Austin to move on. The yelling and the screaming, the know-it-all-ness. I know that's not a word, but it was just time. June Jones was a breath of fresh air, and if he would have been inserted earlier in the season, the Ticats would have had a real shot, I think, that year to get things turned around much faster. But I will never forget those interactions between Drew Edwards and Ken Austin. Full credit to him, because a lot of times, Hodge, you know this well, and JC, you probably do too, it was just Drew Edwards and Ken Austin post-game in what I guess we could call a scrum. It was essentially a one-on-one. And Eddie, as I affectionately called him, never backed down and always asked the most difficult question. He did not give an F what the situation was. He was a true journalist. He taught us, I'll just say actually myself, well, Hodge, you can speak to that if you want to ask those questions when they needed to be asked, because that is the true sign, I believe, of the best, the elite sports journalists. And he did that time and time again, even though he knew that Ken Austin was putting that hand down beside his waist into a fist and probably want to punch him in the face multiple times, but he asked it dead, point blank, to his face. Full credit. And when I remember this game, that was right up there with one of the most tense post-game interviews that I've ever seen in the CFL.
Yeah, I have tremendous respect for journalists who are able to do that. It's not a comfortable position to be in with any coach. And Kent Austin is right up there with the at the top of the list of coaches that are probably most likely to take a shot at you in public. So I do not envy Drew Edwards' position there and have tremendous respect for what he accomplished. I will say this, as much as that was a dumpster fire in Hamilton at the end and Kent Austin absolutely had to go, it's strange how he sort of failed upwards in a lot of ways, going back to the NCAA level. Had a lot of success as the OC at Liberty University, helped develop them into one of the better group of five programs in the country. Of course, had Malik Willis as his quarterback, who ended up in the NFL. And now he's at Auburn as the quarterback's coach. That's about as big as of a school as you can possibly be hired by south of the border. So Kent Austin needed to go there, but he's landed on his feet elsewhere.
Yes, I learned a tremendous amount from Drew Edwards. I do want to make that very clear. And something that I will never understand, and like, look, I get emotions, but at the end of the day, we as reporters have to have mea culpas if we do make a mistake or if we say something unfair. Like this is a job that requires a lot of self-reflection. I will never understand a coach who loses 60-1 and then decides to take it out on the media. Like, you suck. Objectively, you suck. I'm not saying that to be mean. This isn't the gymnastics in the Olympics where a judge has to sit there and decide who's the best one. Look at the scoreboard. Ball don't lie. As they say, ball don't lie. You suck right now. Answer the question. You owe this to the fans, who, by the way, just had to sit through that, paying their hard-earned money. And guess what? When you're great, and it's the opposite, you're up 60-1, we're going to be here lobbing softballs, because you've earned that. Your team's great. But don't take it out of the media. And I'm glad that, by the way, when you're telling that story, Dunk, you're talking about a big brawl. My first thought was, Did Kent and Eddie fight? I didn't know that. Interesting. And he said, oh, no, it's the players, the offense and the defense in practice. For Eddie's sake, it's probably good they didn't fight because Kent, I think, is a lot bigger than Eddie. But mind you, Eddie's, it's not the size of the dog in the fight. It's the size of the fight in the dog. Eddie probably could have held his own. I'll give him that. Anyways, for it, Drew, it, by, and Drew's not dead or anything. He is still out there. He's just not covering the CFL anymore. Eddie, if you're listening, we still love you. It's now time for the 3-minute drill.
Hodge, you published your annual list of the Canadians and former CFL players in NFL training camps. What was your main takeaway from the list?
Well, the main takeaway is this takes too long to write. There's 53 players. Oh my goodness, it takes so long to write. But it's a pleasure to do the list every year. I'm glad that people like it. The only thing I was a little bit put out by is that a bunch of changed. I did forget one. There's always one you forget. But the day after I published the list, Shane Ray signed with the Tennessee Titans. Hakeem Butler signed, I think it was with the Pittsburgh Steelers. And Nathan Rourke got cut. So there was a bunch of changes right after. I think the NFL needs to consult me next year. Once the list is out, they need to agree to not do any transactions for like a week afterwards. I think it's a perfectly reasonable request. The Edmonton Elks released former first-round NFL draft pick Robert Kemdiche after he played only 4 games along their defensive line. Was that a surprise to you?
No, it wasn't really a surprise to me. I didn't think Kemdiche was going to work out. He showed some flashes early, but then he was banged up. Of course, he had the coaching change. I'm sure Chris Jones and his relationships south of the border had a big role in why he was in Edmonton. I wasn't surprised to see him go. Jeremiah Mazzoli returned to the lineup with the Ottawa Redblacks this past week as the third stringer behind Drew Brown and Dustin Crum. Will we see him take any snaps this season?
It's good that he's healed and is, I would imagine, 100% healthy. But the only way I think that he plays is if there are quarterback injuries in Ottawa or elsewhere around the league. The Blue Bombers have already sold out this year's Banjo Bowl against the Saskatchewan Roughriders. Is that the best rivalry game in the CFL? Bro, are you crazy? It's a Labor Day Classic. Come on.
I mean, I'm going to be at both this year, so I'm interested to see which one is better from an atmosphere standpoint. Something I will say, like, the Bombers have a sanctioned tailgate area, which is where they, like, sell beer and have bands and stuff. And I think that a lot of out-of-town fans think that that's the only tailgating that happens at Princess Auto Stadium. And I think from a legal standpoint, that is the only tailgating that can take place at Princess Auto Stadium. But just so people are aware, there is a massive amount of tailgating that goes on in the parking lots all across the University of Manitoba. And Banjo Bowl, I went to pick up my press pass, I think it was 2 years ago, it was 2022, at 8:30 in the morning. And by my rough count, I probably counted 2,000 people out tailgating already. The game was like 6 hours away. I don't know how you start partying that early and still function at game time, but there were some people there evidently in for the long haul. So Banjo Bowl is the best. I mean, tailgates are always good in Winnipeg. Banjo Bowl is the best tailgate. And I'm excited to see what the atmosphere is like Labor Day and Banjo Bowl. The Argonauts are waiting to hear back from the CFL regarding Chad Kelly's possible reinstatement. JC, do you expect the league's reigning MOP back after his 9-game suspension is up?
Well, if he's able to, he will be. The Toronto Argonauts have made that clear. We have received no update from the league regarding when his evaluation will take place or how he's progressing in that. I expect we won't get that until right at the 9-game mark, although the Argos are hopeful that he can return to practice soon before the suspension has expired. Just a note on that, guys. I've seen lots of criticism online about the fact that he might return to practice early or that he's been at the facility a few times throughout the suspension. That's legal. Under the terms of the CBA, suspended players can practice with their team all throughout their suspension. The Argos made the decision not to have him there throughout the 9 games. That was a team decision. As far as the league is concerned, and this is true in just about every major sport, you can practice while suspended. No rules have been broken here, and no rules will be broken if he returns to practice next week or the week after. The Blue Bombers-Riders game from Week 7 posted the lowest TV ratings between the two teams since 2018. Why do you think that was, Dunk?
This is one is hard to say, to be honest. It was the second game of a doubleheader, which could possibly be the reason. But other than that, honestly, fellas, I'm at a loss. Do you guys have any quick takes on it?
It was the jerseys. It was the jerseys. Too hard to read. It was the jerseys. That's my take.
All right. We'll blame the jerseys. No obsidian obsession. The Winnipeg Blue Bombers are inducting their 1984 Grey Cup team and former chairperson Bill Watchorn into their Hall of Fame. Are those worthy selections?
I think so. I can't believe that the 1984 Grey Cup team wasn't in the Hall of Fame already. And for those who aren't aware, obviously Winnipeg had a tremendous Grey Cup drought from 1990 until they won it again in 2019. But the 1984 Grey Cup team broke a drought that was almost just as long. The only difference is for that entire drought, the Bombers didn't appear in a Grey Cup game. I think it was 22 years. They went without even making it to a Grey Cup. That was largely because they were coming out of the West Division when Warren Moon and, you know, the Edmonton football team was going crazy and making it to the Grey Cup every year, winning it all the time. At least from 1990 to 2019, I think the Bombers played in five. So they lost them all, which I'm sure sucked for Bomber fans, but they at least got to the Grey Cup and got to celebrate that. Can you imagine not going to a Grey Cup for 20 years? That's brutal. In a 9-team league, some of those years I think was an 8-team league. That's brutal. The Seattle Seahawks released Canadian defensive back Jonathan Sutherland. JC, do you expect to see him with the Montreal Alouettes anytime soon?
I don't. He has a workout with the Denver Broncos today, I believe. I expect him to land with another NFL team, at least for training camp. He was brilliant in the preseason last year for Seattle before getting hurt and released and then brought back on PR. If he was to end up in Montreal this season, I think it would be a huge, huge addition for this team. In my opinion, Sutherland's plug and play at Sam linebacker in that defense. We all know Reggie Stubblefield has gone down there. Sutherland, I think, would be better than some of the Americans that are currently on the field. As much as they've been competent at that position, Sutherland could be special as a Canadian. The Toronto Argonauts replace Cameron Dukes with Nick Arbuckle for the second straight week. Is it time for Arbuckle to take over the starting role until Chad Kelly is back?
I still think there's some upside in Cam Dukes. I'd like to see him getting some shots, but I understand why Arbuckle has been inserted. He's familiar with the scheme, and Ryan Dinwiddie has a long-standing relationship with him. Rashid Bailey was released by the Toronto Argonauts last week. Do you think there's a good chance he ends up back in the peg?
Well, I talked to his agent on Saturday, and he said he had a meeting with Kyle Walters on Sunday. The interesting, though, is that the Bombers were back practicing today, and there was no announcement. By the way, we're recording this Tuesday, in case you're listening to this a little bit later on. So I think there's a decent chance. Like, and by the way, Rashid Bailey's agent also represents Kenny Lawler, so these two sides have an established relationship getting these types of contracts done. But if Bailey hasn't signed already, I don't know what the holdup is. Maybe there's interest from another team. I'll have to circle back with the agent. The Red Blacks were without a running back for most of their game against Calgary last week after Reichel Armstead was ejected early in the second quarter. JC, do you think Ottawa handled that well?
Well, I think they handled it very well. Braylon Agasson went into the backfield. They didn't miss a beat. They were great offensively in that game. But I had two takeaways from this ejection. First of all, what a boneheaded decision by Reichel Armstead, knowing that he already had an objectionable conduct penalty in his back pocket, to go after, I believe it was Brandon Dozier on that play, and get into it with him. You absolutely have to be smarter in that position. He very nearly cost his team. But my second takeaway, and you guys will love this, guys, running backs don't matter. Ottawa just played basically three quarters of a dominant victory without a single running back on the roster, and it did not matter one iota. We talk, oh, can Reichel Armstead replace Devontae Williams, and will they be okay at the running back position? Clearly, they don't even need to dress one, and they'll be fine offensively. That's how little that position matters to victories. Ryan Reynolds fondly recalled his childhood watching BC Lions games when Wrexham AFC played a friendly in Vancouver against the Whitecaps. Do you think we'll ever see Louis Pasaglia make a cameo in one of his Deadpool films?
If Lou still has that sweet stash, then I think there could be a chance.
He does not.
The Manitoba Sports Hall of Fame is... Oh, well, then there's no chance. The Manitoba Sports Hall of Fame is posthumously inducting longtime CFL sports writer Randy Turner in November. Is he a worthy selection?
Yes. Turner's been gone for 5 years. He passed away after a battle with gallbladder cancer. He's very much missed. He was only 57 when he was gone. And I could say, as someone who grew up reading Randy Turner, one of the funniest columnists, but also insightful columnists I've ever read. He won multiple national newspaper awards, and he's very much missed. He also was amazing on Twitter. His account still exists, obviously. He's been gone for 5 years, but he had a huge following on Twitter relative to anything else. Like, he was so funny on Twitter. People, I think, followed him for his comedy as much as anything else. JC, you put together a mock Olympic team for Canada in the sport of football. What was the hardest position to decide?
Well, this was a very fun project. I was doing it for the second time. We did it back in 2021 when they had those delayed Olympics in Tokyo. There's some tough calls, but the hardest position group overall, the offensive line. I had to leave out basically every CFL All-Star and a couple of beloved UBC boys in Giovanni Manu and Theo Benedict because the quality of NFL starters available was just simply too good to get them onto a tight roster. I think you could have two or three competent starting offensive lines with the amount of Canadian talent we have at that position right now. It was truly like trying to pick your favorite child. Cody Fajardo has returned to practice with the Montreal Alouettes. Do you think he'll play this week against the Tiger Cats?
If you're activating that guy early, you gotta think there's a chance that he's gonna play or it's already been decided. So I would say that odds are better than not that Fajardo's back at quarterback for the Owls. Chris Tomafichuk told 3Down Nation that he raised a bunch of money for cancer research amid his Guinness World Record attempt, attending all 9 CFL stadiums in the fastest time. How impressive is that?
Extremely impressive. And he told me that he raised $20,000. Some people from the CFL Fans Fight Cancer organization have said some of that was raised before his initiative. Regardless, he raised a bunch of money for a children's cancer organization, which is sensational. And I loved what he had to say about attending each facility. He'd actually already been to all 9 CFL stadiums, which is an accomplishment in and of itself. But when I asked him about the game day experiences, we got to Calgary and he said, they just need a new stadium, man. That place is really showing its age. So, Danielle Smith, I don't care who's listening, get a new building. Come on. Stampeders need it. Let's make it happen. Thank you, as always, for listening to the 3Down Nation podcast. We will be back, JC and myself, for picks later this week. And then we'll, of course, return next week to talk about all the action that was from Week 9 in the CFL. We'll see you then.
American Giant makes great clothing, T-shirts, jeans, and more, right here in the U.S., creating jobs in towns and cities across the country. Support America's workers and get 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.